There we go. Can you see that on my screen? I get a thumbs up. Okay, great. I present this because we spent a month going over sort of the overall map of the transcendental sequence. But before talking about faith, which really comes first in this sequence, I kind of want to situate it. When I talked on Monday a couple of weeks ago. This is more or less the same thing I presented there. The whole thing that we're doing this year comes from a short text called the Upanishasutta, which is based within a larger text called the Samyutta Nikaya. And it's a discourse on the supporting conditions for awakening. It's actually a really short little bit. It's easy if you want, and I would encourage it for you to go and read the Upanishasutta on your own. It won't take you very long. But one thing that's described in it, so very commonly, well, not very commonly, but in many places in these teachings, we see what's called the dependent arising sequence. And that's what's written on the left side here. Right? This is the cycle that kind of leads to our ongoing suffering. It's a description of how we experience the world, respond to the world, and end up in dissatisfaction or suffering, and then kind of moving in a cycle where we repeat this over and over and over again. Right? So that is the cycle that's described as the mundane sequence on the left. It's the typical sequence that's described in these teachings. What is unusual in the Upanishasutta is the description of the second sequence that you see on the right, the transcendental sequence. And this represents a breaking away from the cycle on the left, where we kind of keep going and we keep suffering and we keep doing the same things over and over again. And it's a breaking away that ultimately leads to our awakening. So it's the good stuff. So this whole year is kind of, there's a kind of positive ring to this year. We're describing the states that occur as we begin to transcend, as we move through that transcendence. And so, if you can see on this graph I've put up, there's a dashed line, this diagonal dashed line. Do you see that? That goes from suffering to faith, right? This is the transition from the mundane sequence to the transcendental sequence. And so, what's described here is that at some point when we encounter suffering, it is possible to break away from the loop. And faith, this thing that we're talking about today, is kind of the energizing condition that breaks us away, right? So before I start talking about that more, I want to discuss a couple of other things that I think are slightly relevant. One thing, this was asked last month, the question, is this a sequence where one thing leads to the next? And the answer is yes. We can, on the left side, ignorance leads to kamma, leads to consciousness, so on and so forth. And then suffering can, number 12, can lead back to ignorance, number one, or can lead to faith, right? So it is true that one thing leads to the next, but it is also not true that one thing necessarily leads to the next. Suffering can go back to ignorance or it can go to faith. And there are different conditions that would allow you to follow that dashed line and move off onto this transcendental path, right? So the dashed arrow is not to be taken for granted, right? And I want to mention another thing. Bhikkhu Bodhi has an interpretation of the Upanishasutta. And in that, he describes that the path itself facilitates the achievement of the goal. Okay? And that the goal itself, meaning the end, the awakening that comes at the end of all of this, he describes that it bends back to participate in the shaping of the path. So my interpretation of this is that not only, first of all, as I said, that one thing doesn't necessarily just automatically lead to the other in an automatic and impersonal way. It requires a sense of the goal we're trying to reach. And it requires intention and effort, creating the conditions for the next step to happen. So we have to have a sense of where we're going, the end point itself, this awakening, if we're really to be led down this transcendental path. And we have to do work, real work, to cultivate the conditions to move from one to the next to the next. Okay. So what's needed, right? The focus of my talk today will be on what are the requirements here? What are the requirements of faith? That are these first steps to getting onto this path, this new path, the transcendental path. But before I do that, I want to say a few words about what faith means, because that's pivotal. So we've had a couple of talks already this month on faith, and so some has come from that. But I'll sort of tell my personal story with the word faith. Like many people here, I think. It's not a word that I really like, right? I came into when I came into hearing this word faith in the context of Buddhism, I started with it being tied to the word devotion, faith and devotion, right? Those words kind of went together to me. And I know many people here come from a Christian path, and that it has a specific meaning in that path. And you've moved from that path to perhaps a different path, or perhaps you're still in Christianity and you're also doing these contemplations as well. But I came into this differently. I was brought up Hindu, and there is a slightly different meaning to the word faith and the tie to devotion there. So in Hinduism, it's considered that there are very many paths to the good, to the goal or the end, which is something like realizing the true self. And one is the path of bhakti, and the other is the path of jnana. Okay? And the path of bhakti is the path of devotional faith. It's sort of the way that most Hindus, I think, practice. That's my understanding. And it's kind of that, you start with this faith, and the faith moves you forward. It propels you. And the other path, the path of jnana, is the path of experiential wisdom. It's kind of like you're seeing for yourself, you're exploring, and you're meditating, and you are gaining experience, and through that experience, wisdom. And that wisdom that you are cultivating, that understanding, that knowledge that you're cultivating is what propels you forward. And so when I came into this, I thought of the word faith as really tied to the path of bhakti, the sort of devotional faith path. But in Buddhism, the word that we're talking about, which is the word in Pali is saddha, which is sometimes translated as faith, sometimes confidence, trust, conviction. It's actually more closely tied to the path of jnana in Hinduism. It's tied to this sort of, this idea that you experience it for you're meant to try this for yourself. You're not meant to come in with a sort of blind or devotional sense of faith to these beliefs or ideas. You're not meant to believe that this transcendental path even exists, as it's stated here, with certainty. Or that the mundane path exists, or that the wheel keeps turning and you keep cycling through the mundane path from suffering back to ignorance. This isn't meant to be something that you just swallow. The saying "ehi pasako," you see for yourself, right, is intrinsic to this Buddhist path. So the word faith, I prefer, because of my associations with it, I prefer the translation of saddha, the original Pali word, to something more like confidence. It's not quite just confidence. Confidence and trust and conviction, those three words feel like the blend that we're looking for, or they resonate with me as I think about the way faith is applied on this path. Confidence, trust, and one thing that's important is that faith is not an all or nothing, right? There are degrees of faith. So Tim gave an analogy here that I think makes this really palpable for me. He talked, earlier this month on a Monday, and he described the feeling of it this way. He said, imagine you've been lost at sea, like maybe you've been in a shipwreck, and you're in the middle of the ocean, and you're holding on to a life preserver in the middle of the sea. And you're holding on to this preserver because letting go of it means you will drown. But you also know that just holding on to this preserver is not going to get you back, right? You're in the middle of the sea. This isn't the ultimate thing. And you can imagine that in the distance you see a ship and you see its lights, and then you see a rowboat come from the ship and paddle toward you. And someone from the rowboat tells you, I can help you, but you've got to let go of that life preserver and swim toward me. Now imagine what you would feel in that moment. This preserver, you've been holding on to it because it's the only thing between you and dying. And someone's asking you to let go of it and come towards their rowboat. And so doing so is an act of faith. It's an act of trust. You have to have conviction that you're going to get somewhere better. And you also have to have fully understood that being with this preserver is not going to get you there, right? This is not the solution. This may be temporary. It might be something that you can survive with, but you're not going to get all the way there if you're just holding on to this preserver. I thought it was a great analogy and a really good way of thinking about the type of faith we're talking about, the faith to go to the rowboat, right? But I want to distinguish here in that analogy, you can't both hold on to the preserver and swim to the rowboat. And one thing in real life is we don't have 100% faith in the way we kind of need to let go of that life preserver and move to the rowboat. We can still kind of somehow hold on, right? Like I've been doing this specific lineage of practice for 13 years now. And I still kind of take it one day at a time. I haven't fully dived in. I haven't let go of the life preserver and swum in that sort of totally convicted way. I'm doing this one day at a time because it works. And I'm gaining faith as I go along that this works, but it's a rocky path. There are days when I kind of forget. I kind of forget, oh yeah, all the things that have come from my practice, all the things that have come from this path to me. I'll completely forget them some days, and I'll go full on into doubt. And then there are other days when I feel I can feel it. It's working through me. I remember, I recall what this has given me. And I feel relatively more faith. But to this day, I feel uncomfortable doing things like calling myself Buddhist. Because that feels like a conviction in a way that is a little hard for me to swallow. I kind of, even if it's sort of true in all practical ways, I kind of want to say to myself, well, I'm doing this now because it's working for now. I'm more comfortable making statements like that. So at least for myself, and if that resonates with anyone else here, I have a degree of faith. I have a degree of confidence, and over time it's increasing. But it's not like it's there and it's there all the way and all the time. So on the one hand, this is good, right? This degree, it's kind of what Buddhism is asking for. See for yourself. Don't take anyone's word for it. Evaluate your teachers. Evaluate this practice. But on the other hand, we all know, or we may have experienced in various places in our life, maybe this lesson comes through relationship that, without a degree of commitment, there's only so much progress we can make. Right? If the ground beneath us isn't firm, we can't leap off of it in quite the same way, Lyndall described something when we were talking about this month that stuck with me, which is the way that faith leads to energy, right? And she mentioned that she notices that when she has a little less energy in practice, it's often a lack of faith, right? That's behind it. And I've noticed, I suppose, similar things. You know, if I'm sitting in meditation and I haven't really, you know, brought my alignment into the practice, I haven't brought my full intention, my understanding of why I'm doing this, right? That faith, that conviction, I can be a little diffused. You know, I'm sitting and I'm doing it because it's a habit to sit, but I can drift off a lot more when I don't have that conviction. I'm not moving forward in the same way that I would if I really had that reminder of why I'm here, why I'm doing this, right? So there are a few things, there are a few specific conditions that lead to the energizing of faith, and through that lead to moving through the rest of this path, the right side of this path, you know, with more gusto. I'll stop sharing for the moment so you can go back to this. So one is a certain kind of energy, right? When we were on the left side of that path, cycling through the mundane, you know, cycle of suffering, what kind of brings us into practice, what all of us have some degree of, just by virtue of the fact that we're sitting here in this Zoom meeting, right? Is that there is some energy that must have told us there's got to be a better way, right? There's got to be a way to live life that isn't just a cycle of suffering, right? You know, you can think for yourself, what led you to being here in this meeting at this moment right now? What led you here? Maybe it's just a curiosity, but maybe it's a drive. Maybe you've been here for weeks and months and years. Attending this on Sunday or attending something similar. Something brought you here, right? And that there's some degree of energy there, right? You know, for me, I would say it was like before I really got into this path, there was some sense that there was a lot more to my mind and my experience than I was able to see. And that somehow getting still and seeing more clearly seemed like a really good idea, right? You know, and it seemed like it was connected to living a more purposeful life in some way. And yeah, so there was a kind of there's got to be a better way feeling. So Bhikkhu Bodhi describes two other conditions needed for a fully cultivated faith, right? So the first one he describes is we must see suffering's roots. Okay, so if we get to the point where we see these cycles of suffering or just dissatisfaction, maybe that's how you experience the suffering, the cycle of dissatisfaction with life, and you feel like there's got to be a better way, that's not necessarily to see that you see suffering's roots, just that you see that you're caught in some kind of cycle, right? He's saying to really cultivate faith, we must see the roots. Right? We typically engage suffering as the felt sense of pain or stress or dissatisfaction or something like this. And there are kind of two normal ways that Bhikkhu Bodhi says we could respond to that felt sense of suffering. We could either respond unhealthily, right? Like we, you know, we lash out, we, you know, we run away from it, we avoid it, we don't do things that feel healthy as responses. Or we can respond healthily, right? You know, we can cultivate strength. We can think about the things in our life that support us, maybe health or nutrition or fitness or getting out into the sun or being with people, you know, who have a certain kind of nature, you know. And then we respond more wisely, right? We can respond more to something like the proximal cause of that suffering. But even when we're doing it healthily, we aren't necessarily still seeing the roots. We, in a way, like you could think of this as we're seeing the part of the weed that grows above ground, right? And we're able to snip that weed, but of course, underneath the ground are the roots, right? And when we see clearly that suffering, you know, through this practice, through meditation, through mindfulness, you know, through seeing things arise and pass over and over, we see that those shoots of weeds, right, aren't something that just occasionally pop up on a sunny day and need to be clipped. You know, we start to see that they pop up over and over, and we start to get the sense that there is something vast and systemic going on here with suffering, right? There's a root system here. And we also start to see that the roots are not in the external world, but in ourselves. And that's when we stop looking to the outside world for things to blame for that suffering. And we start to look within ourselves for a way to be free of it, right? And this is what he means by seeing suffering's roots, seeing that vast systemic deep sense, and seeing that it lies in ourselves. So that's one condition for fully cultivated faith. The other that he mentions is that we must encounter the wisdom teachings, the Dhamma, in some fashion, right? And I this is where I'll get a little I have a personal interpretation here. The personal interpretation is that it isn't necessary to absolutely see, you know, to start down the path of encountering the Dhamma. We may not have seen, you know, the wholeness of this. We may not have seen this specific teaching, but you know, in me, you know, with this Hindu background that I grew up in, there's enough of an overlap between those teachings and this that for me, what it was seeing that somehow by meditating and coming to understand my experience better, something good was going to happen from that. I probably couldn't have named it much more clearly, right? So that's encountering the Dhamma in some fashion. Right. Now, I think Bhikkhu Bodhi really means very specifically the Buddha Dhamma, right? He means these teachings. And that may be absolutely necessary to fully ground this cultivated faith. But my own feeling about this, and I suppose this is the Hindu part of me, is that, you know, we come into this in a variety of different ways. We might have just had some experience in our lives that was a spark. And there was a spark of truth in it, and that was enough to get us moving and get us moving on this path of faith. So I would encourage you to interpret this and think of this in the way that makes sense for you. But once we do this, right, the faith starts to grow. And the firmer the faith grows, the firmer it is a foundation, the more it propels us forward down this transcendental path, right? This faith is one of the necessary conditions, not all, but one of the necessary conditions to move to the next step, joy, and the next rapture, and the next tranquility, happiness, concentration, knowledge and vision of things as they are, disenchantment, dispassion, freedom, and finally knowledge and ending of cankers, right? And when you read those things, when you've seen that path, maybe you were here last month and you heard us describe this whole path. I'm guessing you probably tried to see for yourself, okay, where am I in this, right? Like, what of these things have I seen? What have I experienced? And one thing I can say for myself is, you know, the times I have moved into joy and rapture, right? The times I'm moving along that path, they come from moments and they're reinforced by moments when I do have more faith. I have more conviction and confidence that this is going to get me somewhere. And then you start to feel the joy and the rapture, and it's almost a confirmation. Oh, okay. All right. Something's happening here, right? Something's happening here. And it starts to reinforce that faith. But the greater we have that foundation of faith, the more we move down through the rest of this path. Each is a supporting and necessary condition for the others. Okay. Thank you for sitting with me for this. I am very curious to hear people's responses to this. And we have some time in the next. So what happens next is I'm going to break us out into small groups. And I'm curious to know, you know, what I'm personally curious about, you know, how do you respond to this word faith? And how do you respond to this framing of faith that I've tried to give you, you know, as a propulsion down this path? as as something maybe that varies in grade, right? We have a certain amount of it, but not maybe a perfect faith. And that, we're and it can grow and it can become the thing where we actually let go of the life preserver and swim to the rowboat, right? I'm curious how you respond to that, but you're welcome to talk about anything that you respond to, that you're stimulated to talk about as a result of this. And so we'll break into groups, and the groups will be 3 or 4 people. And after about 15 minutes, we'll regroup and we'll have a discussion as a full group. As a reminder, in these groups, I just want to mention that we listen to each other with an open heart. You don't have to speak if you don't want to. We should refrain from giving advice or interrupting. We should keep all sharing confidential. So when we go back to the main group, you're welcome to share your own reflections, but not the reflections of other people that were told to you in that space. And also allowing people time to speak. All right, with that, I'm going to break us into groups. We'll see you in 15 minutes after I get this done. Welcome back. So we have a moment now for any questions that have come up. Oh, Susan's got her raised hand already. So if you have any questions, any comments, feel free to raise your hand the way that Suze just did. There should be a button maybe at the bottom of your Zoom, depending on how you have Zoom set up. Somewhere you'll find a raised hand. Go ahead, Suze.
Well, I did that because your three words of confidence, trust, and conviction, I added a fourth word of being, or words, open to mystery. And we had quite a, it's kind of connected to also the don't know mind and being open to what's going to come next. And I felt that for me, that was an important component of
Oh yeah.
faith. So that's why
That's
I shot up my hand right away. Now
Oh man,
I'm
I love
going to put
that.
it down.
Yeah, I love that. It really brings it from the ways that we can think about faith in the context of other religions, to this sense of discovering, right? Where we don't have to know, we don't have to believe everything. And we're letting ourselves be, we're letting our, we're allowing ourselves to walk down a path that we don't maybe see everything along the way for, right? Yeah, I love that. That is certainly a certain kind of faith, walking out into the unknown and being open to the mystery. Thank you. Yeah. Sherry.
Yeah, I enjoy hearing that too. And want just to add to the list, we talked about the word curiosity, that it holds possibly both ends of the spectrum of faith and doubt. And
Yeah.
we spoke a lot about what it's like to encounter the Dharma from coming from other faiths, and it was a very sweet and productive conversation. So thank you for the prompt.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry. Thank you. Yeah, curiosity. It sounds like a lot of us were thinking along similar lines. Yeah, you weren't in Suze's group, I guess, were you? No. Yeah. Yeah, lovely. Judith, yeah.
Thanks, Arv. Yeah, I had lots of thoughts, but thanks for your talk. It was very, very stimulating, And of course, I talked a lot about this last week, but once I kind of escaped the Presbyterian Church and the whole Orthodox approach to faith, which is basically blind faith, we believe this for which there is no evidence, and that's that. And then I became much more involved in the more mystical religions, certainly the whole yoga Vedanta thing and Sufism, and what's so interesting about Buddhism, I find, is that because I still have that mystical side to me, but there's no contradiction, you know, there's no exclusion in any of these paths. And I know a lot of people who consider them to be mystical Christian and Buddhist, or Sufi and Buddhist. And
yeah.
It's like Buddhism isn't a religion, you know, but it's got this clarity and this organized fashion of, okay, this is the way the mind works. It's almost more like a psychology than, I know the Dalai Lama calls it a philosophy,
mm-hmm.
not a religion, but I'm almost thinking of it as a philosophical psychology or something like that. But I find it just goes along just fine with my mystical, and you use the word devotion, and I used that also last week, because there is a devotional side to my spirituality, but it's devotion without an object, if that makes any sense.
Hmm.
More of a sense of reverence and wonder and,
oh,
you know, like there is a reality that is bigger than my daily little
yeah.
reality, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, that reminds me a bit of what Sue said too, just opening to the mystery. And
opening
mystery,
to the mystery, absolutely.
In the mystery, there is vast potential. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Judith. That's
lots of thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I love these perspectives on the word and
mm-hmm.
and how it means something. It means something very different to us depending on where we come from and what our experiences are.
Yeah, and I had a very negative attitude toward faith when I was, you know, breaking away
yeah.
from the church. But now I like it, and I think of it. I want to reclaim it in a way, because I'm thinking of it as so much more open. And yeah, open to the mystery. That's it. And
yeah.
Not exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking of this now, as you mentioned this. In some ways, when I think of faith, actually, when I'm practicing, what I'm actually thinking of is sort of the opposite of doubt.
Uh-huh. Well,
the level of doubt I don't have at a moment.
Right. And one thing that Sharon Salzberg says, that doubt is not the opposite of faith.
Interesting.
Despair.
Despair. I see.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Lyndall.
Yeah, I also really liked what Suze said about being willing to step into the mystery. And I also thought about this in a way that's even not even going so far as to say mystery, but even just sort of the enough trust to be willing to try, to be willing to check it out.
Yeah.
Because I think early in my practice, I wouldn't necessarily have had a big sense about the mystery or the not knowing, but just being willing to, just willing to check it out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that aspect of faith, just that much trust. And I also liked, you know, how you had those conditions for faith and talked about how we may not meet them completely. Like the Bhikkhu Bodhi talking about really understanding the roots of our suffering. I mean, I feel like to truly understand the roots of suffering really deeply, that's
yeah.
a lifetime project.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like understanding enough to take the step to try to do something different than what we usually do, and then the faith grows. So this kind of idea that it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. It,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting. When I was trying to resolve what Bhikkhu Bodhi was saying, where I came to, and this is my own imperfect understanding, right? Like this is my speculation, really, is that to have the condition for a perfect faith is that, you know, full understanding of the roots of suffering, that, you know, and also that exposure to the Dhamma in the way that he means it. But that, it's not like we can't make some progress along this path with the first sparks, with just the there's got to be a better way, right? Like, I mean, if you think about the Buddha's own path, right? When the Buddha left home after seeing suffering, aging, death, illness, and realizing that, hey, these ways aren't, there's got to be something better than this, right? His conviction, he didn't have the Dhamma fully laid out in front of him, right? If we think of the Dhamma that we're supposed to be relying on as being the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, the reliance on these things, well, he didn't have the Buddha, to rely on in this way. And, my understanding is that he started off with just a certainty that there was an end to this path, right? And that there had to be something better. And that was enough. That was enough to get moving, Jeremy. If it is indeed Jeremy who's speaking, I know there are two people.
On that note, you said the word certainty, and what I was going to talk about was the like word mystery, which we discussed a bit in our breakout. And I was talking about how mystery for me is not usually a positive thing. I really crave this like sense of certainty. And I think that one of the main reasons that this discussion of faith feels very different than others is the difference between this sort of solid certainty and this idea of like mystery or something that is not certain. Because I think for me, so much of Buddhist and also other meditative practices is being comfortable with uncertainty. And so there is a very different type of faith for me that develops when it's not based on certainty, when it's based on like this sort of like soft acceptance and belief of something. So I think like getting comfortable with this idea of mystery is I think very central to that for me.
You've raised a really, really good point. You're right. It is central, right? Being uncomfortable with allowing uncertainty, right? Sitting with uncertainty, sitting with mystery is a big part of this practice. And it is utterly tied to how we are talking about faith here. It absolutely is, because we aren't talking about something that's being handed to you on a platter that you're being asked to have faith in. We're asking you to sort of develop, test, energize through your own experience the strength of your confidence in a practice that you don't start off knowing everything about, that you don't know where it's going to lead you. You might just have the vaguest inkling that this could probably do good, right, when you first begin this. And then it grows maybe, over time, and you start to see the benefits and you start to see the things that are improving. And it just slowly solidifies. And as it does, you're cultivating that relationship with the uncertainty. It changes a little bit, but you have to start off with that, don't you? That comfort with the uncertainty to go on a path like this with the kind of faith we're talking about. Thank you. I think that's a really interesting point, worthy of a lot of reflection. So I'll end with an offering of metta. And then I'll stick around in case, Julie, you want to ask your question. May we awaken to the truth of our experiences. May we free ourselves from all unnecessary suffering. May all beings awaken to the truth of experience. May all beings be free of suffering. Thanks everyone for joining us.